And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. All right, time now, 3:34, and I'm saying this show, we cover down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation, Alabama. And I mean, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. All right, before we go any further, college pick'em. Talk to
us. So all right. So sent out text today
to our text strings.
Yep, through the text stream, and then also it is on our website. So it's up on our website on the main page, up to the right corner. You can click for the directions, and it also has the link there. All you got to do is click on the link, put in the group number, password that I already have there on for you, and then just sign up. And then you make your picks every week. They usually come out on Monday or Tuesday. Just make them before the game.
So they'll come like to your email address or something?
It'll come to your email address, or you can sign up for the app as well. Just have the app on your phone. So
you know,
I
hate apps.
I know you hate apps, but you can do it through your email and through your computer as well. So it makes it super simple. Thanks to everyone that's already signed up. This is more just to get everybody involved and just keep us ruffians together.
You got several dozen that have already jumped right in.
Yeah, I believe we're up to, close to 30.
Yeah,
so,
cool.
I mean, we just did it this afternoon or this morning.
How many do we have in the NCAA Madness?
I think
thing?
We had close to
like 100 and
close
something.
Close to 100, yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe a little over. So this will be fun.
All right, good deal. So yeah, I mean, we will not abuse those text lines. We do this very sparingly, but yes. So we sent out to the 900 and something people we have or whatever it is in the text lines. We sent y'all a message earlier. Check your phones. If you don't see it, then text us now at 833-687-4448. Get in the system. And if you need the information, Boomer can send it to you. But, yeah, and this is not rocket science either, right, Boomer? We're not doing any of the spreads and
no,
do all
no
that
spread.
Kind of
this is just flat out who do you think is going to win.
Bam.
So makes it a lot easier. Just
Auburn.
I don't think Auburn is going to play every
or
game.
Or Eagles strike out the bat. Yeah. As he shuts off his mic and goes back to the board. All right. Hey, listen, I gotta spend a minute talking before I jump into my dippers here, because what just happened yesterday is just beyond the pale. So if somebody out there in law enforcement would care to correct me, I would be glad to hear it. But my recollection is that a mugshot is a part of standard processing. However, it is also waivable, generally speaking, and it is generally done to make sure that you have a physical record of the looks of the individual in the event that they become a flight risk. Pretty sure Trump's image is pretty well known. But, oh, man, we're going to get us some Trump mugshot. Got to get us a Trump mugshot. And they got it. And it's the first time in the history of the United States this has ever happened, that a former president of the United States has had a mugshot. Now, listen, think about it. This is the fourth indictment. Did anybody else take a mugshot? No, they didn't. Why? Because they were trying not to make it into a circus. Not that it wasn't already, but you know what I'm saying. They didn't want to advance the cause, so to speak. All they did was inflame the passions of Trump supporters left and right. Just totally inflame the passions. And at the same time, it's becoming the meme of the year. And not, by the way, in the way they might have thought it would. Because the very first thing that happened is Trump, who's been banned from Twitter for the last 2 years, went back on his Twitter account and published his own mugshot and said that they're basically trying to steal the election. And he put up there the website where you can support his campaign. And I guarantee you, he has probably seen a spike in donations today. So, yeah, I mean, this what a jackleg situation. This is just unbelievable. And the very idea that we're having to do this is just so banana republic. Yeah, okay. Well, nobody's above the law, Phil. Nobody's above the law. This is not it. This is political. You know it is. You cannot tell me it took Fannie, what's her name, Willis, 3 years to figure out whether to bring allegations against Trump. Charges could not get levied for 3 years. Oh, right in the middle of the campaign season. And now she wants to pursue the arraignment right around the time of the next debate. Oh, by the way, she wants to pursue the trial like right before the primary election season. It just all said and done, everything about this reeks. And if you don't think, by the way, let me just back up. Prosecutors are also allowed a certain amount of discretion. You can not declining to prosecute. I mean, that can happen too. You can assign prioritization. You can have plea deals. And you can also, by the way, work to determine that you've got the right case in the right posture at the right time. Timing is also everything. Statutes of limitations, you don't want them to run. But nonetheless, beyond that, timing is also essential. So what's happening? She slaps this thing together using novel theories of law and indicts Trump and 18 other people, some of whom were just making phone calls on behalf of Trump because he was their boss, some of whom were attorneys who were acting on his behalf to file legal challenges that they are allowed to file by law. And yet here we are. It's not political, Phil. This is real. Ain't nobody above the law. We got to do this. Yeah, do you really? And mugshot too? Well, then why didn't the other three indictments do mugshots? 91 counts that he's facing right now, but these are the ones where he had to have the mugshot because Fannie Willis needed a poster for her wall, I guess. All said and done, this is a mess. It's an absolute mess. But Trump, in classic fashion, is showing us what it's like. Here's the thing. Bullies don't know what to do when you laugh in their face and stand up to them. They don't know what to do. So I would bet you that they decided before he even got to Atlanta, they decided, you know what? Let's get that mugshot and do something with it. What do you want to do? Maybe time to go back on Twitter. Wow, that's an idea. First post in 2 years? Yep, let's do it. So here we are. And it was a by the way, there's always that moment where you're thinking, okay, it's time for mugshot. Which face do I use? Do I do the happy I could care less face? Do I do the tearful I can't believe this is happening to me face? Do I do the stare in the camera like I want to throttle somebody face? That's what he chose. He chose the stare in the camera with the look that says, if I could reach you right now. And like I said earlier, I look at that image and I swear I hear Liam Neeson's voice. I have a particular set of skills. I will find you. So we'll see how this goes, but already it is backfiring for him. All right, hey, we're going to start the next one right after this break. I'm going to take the break about a minute or so early because that is my prerogative. As Boomer looks at me like, what are you doing? I'm taking a break. Taking a break about a minute early so I can come back and just dive right in. Rabid Russia. Craziness happening over there. We got to talk about it because, y'all, that's a nuclear nation, one of our few near-peer adversaries on the world stage. And they are going through some strange stuff right now. I'll tell you about it when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, making common sense a superpower. Hey, number one, triple dipper. I guess we can call the Trump mugshot thing a mini dipper. So maybe I'll get some extra points from John. Just throwing that out there, John, in case you're listening. But number one of the triple dipper, the true dipper here is Rabid Russia. So, wow. I mean, listen. Let's keep in mind who we're talking about. You might say, it's Russia. It's one of the largest countries in the world. It is a nuclear nation. It is a nation that is still, despite its, ridiculous, efforts in Ukraine, is still considered one of the strongest armies in the world and is what we would often refer to as a near-peer adversary. Nuclear Russia has some strange stuff going on right now. The kind of things that should give everybody who watches foreign policy should have a real moment of pause with what is happening right now. Not that it's unexpected. On the one hand, you kind of look at some of the stuff and you go, it's Russia. I mean, it's Putin. Yeah, that's don't slip into that. This is not normal. What we're about to talk about here, this is aberrant behavior, okay? This is like Mafia Don stuff. This is like you crossed the Don, and now he's going to make you an offer you can't refuse. You know what I'm saying? Not for nothing. But Jimmy the Nose is going to come and seize you. All right, so what we got right now is just like a series of events that when you look at them in their totality should make everybody wonder what in God's name is happening in Russia. And should we be concerned about the stability of their leadership? Should we be concerned about the security of their nuclear devices? Should we be concerned about what they will do if Putin wakes up in the wrong mood one day? Start with this. You may remember Yevgeny Prigozhin. Yevgeny Prigozhin, just to refresh those of you who may not recall, Yevgeny Prigozhin was in the Putin inner circle. And the guy was a thug. He looked like a Bond villain. If you've ever seen him, he looked like he literally could have just come right out of a James Bond movie. Of course, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die. That's what he looked like. And Prigozhin was a guy who got out of jail after, 10 years for violent crimes, started selling hot dogs on the streets. Apparently he was pretty well healed with the hot dog business. So he went from there to sort of starting a catering business. At some point in the catering business, he met Putin. They became, buddies, and his catering business began to get huge contracts from the federal government, the Russian government. We're talking about massive contracts. Like it's been estimated, story here, pull this one off of Fox. It's been estimated that contracts to his catering company went into the billions over time. Billions with a B. As a result of his billions, Prigozhin then started what was known as the Wagner Group. And the Wagner Group was a private army. Now, some folks may say, yeah, but I mean, Phil, we got things like Blackwater and, Triple Canopy and organizations where contractors go down range and do military stuff. Not like this. They started off that way. The Wagner Group started off that way. But the Wagner Group began to morph into a private army, not like private contractors who carry small arms and stuff like a private army with tanks, artillery, helicopters, all of it. And they became pretty prolific at creating carnage everywhere they went. They were known for violence. They were known for, for instance, the article I'm looking at right here. The group is accused of massacring and raping civilians, exploiting natural resources in poor countries with dire security situations. Resources like gold, oil, and gas, all of which went back to the Russian government. It gave the Russian government the chance to sort of say, well, that's not us doing it. It's Wagner doing their thing. Wagner worked for Putin. Wagner was basically Putin's right-hand man for things he didn't want to have to send the Russian army to do. And he could do it without the approval of additional Russian leadership. They acted with impunity. All that to say, Wagner was actually fighting in Ukraine. And then Prigozhin began to get dissatisfied, believing that his troops were not getting the arms because he was facing the jealousy of generals who were like, who is this fake army when I have my real army? And he wasn't getting the resupply that he needed. He wasn't getting logistical support that he felt he needed. And he wasn't getting the fires support that he felt he needed. And so Prigozhin began to openly complain. Finally, you may recall this, like 2 months ago. How long has it been, Boomer? Like 2 months when he marched on Moscow? Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think it's been a couple months at least.
It has been a couple months.
Yeah. And so Prigozhin, Wagner Group turned around and drove their tanks and armored vehicles straight towards Moscow and claimed they were coming to Moscow to basically make themselves known in a military way. Somewhere along the way, they stood down. I was waiting for Prigozhin to be executed in Red Square. I mean, like up against the wall of the Kremlin, firing squad. Didn't happen. Huh. Everybody's thinking, what the heck? Okay, so let me back up now. What you just have there is a nuclear nation that has a private army, not like the occasional hitman, not like, you know, Black Ops, not like Blackwater that hires, you know, individuals and small groups. No. An independent army working as an arm of the president so he could do what he wanted to do with impunity. Point number one. Point number two, they were fighting on the war front as part of the national effort to take over Ukraine. Oh, so the private army goes where he wants it to go, and they also fight the wars. Number three, the private army then began to march on the Capitol. Can you imagine? I mean, what's the picture if the entire Alabama National Guard decided to mobilize and head towards Washington, D.C. That's what we're looking at. We're looking at a trained combat force with armored vehicles and tanks headed towards the national capital. That happened. They stood down. Then what happened? It got real quiet for a while. There was talk about how things were going to be fine. But this article points out, it's often been said, that Vladimir Putin is one who believes that revenge is a dish best served cold. We learned day before yesterday that a plane carrying notorious Russian warlord Yevgeny Prigozhin, who launched a coup against Russian President Vladimir Putin over the summer, reportedly crashed on Wednesday. It didn't crash over Ukraine. It didn't crash over a foreign country. It didn't crash over Africa where Wagner, or Syria where Wagner is also operating. No. It crashed over Russian airspace with 10 people on board. So here's the bottom line. Don't get on a plane with one of Putin's enemies. Because 10 people lost their lives so that Yevgeny Prigozhin could go down. No one knows for sure. There's been no claim. No one has said, I saw the missile launched. But something happened that took down that plane. And oh, by the way, it didn't go down like in a sort of a dive and just crashed into the earth because they had some kind of equipment failure. We have one report that says witnesses heard a loud bang in the air and the debris field was a mile long. That's not something that happens when a plane begins a nosedive and plows into the ground. No, it blew up in the air. Okay, so statement from the White House. It's been very minimal, by the way. But White House National Security Council spokesperson Adrian Watson said in a statement, "We've seen the reports. If confirmed, no one should be surprised. The disastrous war in Ukraine led to a private army marching on Moscow, and now it would seem to this. The real belief is that Putin went ahead and took him out. Maybe Putin gave him a false sense of security. Here's what I think." This is just Phil. Who am I? But I'm just telling you, here's what I think. Prigozhin had been on the inner circle so long that I guarantee you he had done certain things to protect himself in the event that he ever fell out of favor. I guarantee you he was allowed to live for the last couple of months because Putin had to ensure that he got back whatever evidence he had tucked away. I'm not going to be a bit surprised, though, to find out that there was a open upon my death envelope in some Swiss bank that's going to come out at some point. In the meantime, though, Prigozhin is now done. Putin, in classic Mafia Don fashion, went to a concert. So here's one of his buddies, the head of his private army, to whom he has sent billions of dollars in contracts, who just marched on Moscow in the last couple of months. And Putin, according to the article here from Fox News, made a public appearance at a concert in Russia after the news of the crash had emerged. His press secretary, Dmitry Peskov, told Russian news media that Putin had been informed about Prigozhin and that all necessary measures are being taken, whatever that means. Folks, this is not the behavior of normal countries. This is not the kind of thing that we ever need to see happening with a nuclear nation. But it's happening. And when I get back from this break, I'll tell you more, because now the Wagner boys, some of them are getting their game on, and we'll see how that goes. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. right.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios, hour number two on a beautiful but hot Friday afternoon. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international like we're doing right now. And like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. All right, so let me jump back in. I'm in dipper number one, technically, rabid Russia. So I just gave you the layout about who Yevgeny Prigozhin is, why did he matter, what kind of craziness has been happening, who does that? Can you imagine in the United States of America, can you imagine if a private army, tanks and armored vehicles, decided it was ticked off and decided to roll up towards D.C., demanding certain things? That would be like the headline of the century. Well, that's what just happened in Russia. And then the head of Wagner Group, which is the group I'm talking about, the head of Wagner Group, the mercenary army that had been Putin's right-hand dude for going out there and doing all the raping and pillaging he could, the Yevgeny Prigozhin, after staging a near coup and then backing off, was given a couple of months. No one knows why, but now what we're seeing is Yevgeny Prigozhin is now dead. Story here on the crash. Let me get this one first here. I'll do that one instead. Let me grab it real quick. It's another story from Fox. Fox has covered it better than anybody else, really. Russian villagers, it says, who witnessed the crash of the Wagner chief Yevgeny Prigozhin's jet said they heard an explosion before seeing the plane plummet out of the sky. Prigozhin's plane crashed near the village of Kuzeninko, and residents say they saw the plane fall from the clouds in at least two pieces. One villager emphasized that he had heard a bang or explosion before the plane fell to the ground. CIA Director William Burns, that's our CIA director, warned in late July that Putin was likely biding his time for revenge. He said, "I think what we're seeing is a very complicated dance between Prigozhin and Putin," Burns said. "I think Putin is someone who generally thinks that revenge is a dish best served cold." He said, "I would be surprised if Prigozhin escapes further retribution. In that sense, if I were Prigozhin, I would not fire my food taster." I mean, people who cross Putin wind up getting thrown out of windows. They wind up getting poisoned. How dare you run against me? Do you not know who I am? I am the Russian strongman. And next thing you know, now we've got, okay, and sometimes planes fall from the sky. So the Wagner Group, in a nuclear nation, a private army is now issuing statements that seem to indicate that not everybody's going to step aside and just be good soldiers. Wagner mercenaries, according to the New York Post story yesterday afternoon, Wagner mercenaries threaten revenge, march on Moscow after Prigozhin's death. They say, "Expect us." Purported members of the Russian Wagner mercenary group released chilling videos threatening revenge and a new, quote, march of justice on Moscow after their leader, Yevgeny Prigozhin, reportedly died in a fiery jet crash. A Telegram channel associated with Prigozhin's private army released a short clip showing a trio of masked men in camouflage and body armor making vague threats of retaliation. Some critics, though, have raised questions about the authenticity of the footage, claiming it might be the handiwork of Ukrainian security forces trying to sow panic in Russia, but there was no concrete evidence to support that theory. In the video, this one of the speakers goes on to issue what they call a sinister order to all Wagner units. It says to retrieve their buried assault rifles, machine guns, and grenades, presumably in preparation for an unspecified retaliatory act. They say, quote, "All of us who have fought all these years are seeing the devil has played long enough. Await future orders. Victory will be ours. Glory to Russia." Okay. This is not normal. In the United States, where the FBI decides that parents who speak out at school board meetings are domestic terrorists, we're looking at an actual army in Russia claiming that it's going to go ahead and make themselves known. You will know us. expect us. But what else is happening? Because, folks, I'm just telling you, keep your eye on Russia. This is not stable behavior. This is North Korea acts better than this. Story here from CNN. A top Russian general who vanished after Wagner Rebellion fired as the head of aerospace services. So I'm telling you right now, the purge has begun. This story is datelined yesterday. A top Russian general who went missing after the mercenary group Wagner's incident. He went missing, by the way. No one's seen him in public since June. This is General Sergei Serovkin. He spent 4 decades in the Russian military, including a brief stint running the Russian war effort in Ukraine. He was put in charge of the war in Ukraine in October of 22. He was removed from that post a few months later. He has not been seen in public since June, when he released a video pleading for the Wagner Group leader Yevgeny Prigozhin to stop his insurrection. But there are some, though, who believe that this guy, Serovkin, may have actually been a part owner in the Wagner Group, experiencing the benefits of its work. And he might have known about the rebellion before it started. And he might have tried to save face when he realized it wasn't going well. And Serovkin is now fired officially from his position, and no one has seen him since June. There was one statement made, A Russian lawmaker said in July that Serovkin is just resting. Resting. He's just I see your face, Boomer.
What kind of resting?
Yes, exactly.
Are his eyes, like, forever closed? Resting is he?
Check old boy for a pulse is what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. Resting since June. The purge has begun. By the way, he's not the only one. There was another general. Where was it here in the article, if I got it? Let's see. Yeah. Let's see here. There was another Russian general that was also most recently brutally removed from his position. I can't find it, but it's in that article. Now, lastly, or not quite lastly, I'll say this. I mentioned that all this instability and this flux and this strongman activity and this insurrection-type activity is happening in a nuclear nation. Headline, 2 days ago, from realclearedefense.com. Poland's leader says Russia is moving tactical nuclear weapons into Belarus. Okay, if you look at a map, Russia. To its immediate west, or the left side on the map, Ukraine. Just above Ukraine, bordering both with Ukraine and Russia, Belarus. Belarus, the leader there is a Putin acolyte. Story here from realclearedefense.com. Poland's president, Andrzej Duda, confirmed on Tuesday, not stated, but confirmed on Tuesday, that Russia has begun shifting some of its short-range nuclear weapons to neighboring Belarus. Why? Proximity to Kiev, I would say. This is me talking now, but I would say proximity to Kiev. It's just north of Kiev, the capital of Ukraine. A move that he said will change the security architecture of the region and the entire NATO military alliance. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg denounced Moscow's rhetoric as dangerous and reckless, said that in July that the alliance has not seen any change in Russia's nuclear posture, but tactical nuclear weapons are a game changer. I'm telling you, folks, keep your eyes on all of this. Meanwhile, on the world stage, and I'll end with this. Meanwhile, on the world stage, Iran and Saudi Arabia. By the way, you don't usually see Iran and Saudi Arabia written into friendly fashion together anywhere. Iran is Shia Islam, and then Saudi Arabia is Sunni Islam, and they hate each other, generally speaking. But for some reason, there's an organization of developing economies called BRICS, stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. BRICS has now had the United Arab Emirates, Argentina, Egypt, and Ethiopia, and Iran and Saudi Arabia join them. What they're doing is forming a bloc of countries designed to get around U.S. sanctions and designed to support each other on the world stage when they know that they are in some way pariahs and not always considered friendly to U.S. interests. So whereas we have the G7 or G8, we have the League of Nations that works together, what we're seeing now is rather than trying to become good actors and join in where they can, China and Russia are heading up a coalition called BRICS that has done nothing except try to begin to move towards circumventing typical world trade and working among themselves. I'm telling you, folks, keep your eyes on this. This ain't small. This is a big, hairy deal. And none of this is normal behavior. None of it. Russia is not a good actor. All right, we're going to take a break right now. We'll take that break. We'll come right back, and I'll probably take some text messages, kick off the topic that we'll be discussing with State Senator Garland Gudger here in a few minutes. Jobs, jobs, jobs. That's what we're going to be talking about. Alabama, how do we rank on the national stage for people wanting to move their businesses here? We'll talk about it and what we can do to help make it better. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, so coming up here in a few minutes, State Senator Garland Gudger, who hails from the Cullman area, will be in studio with us talking about economic development, jobs, and how we can best increase Alabama's posture on the national scene so that we are a true competitor for the best jobs out there. And it's, by the way, it's cutthroat, man. I mean, I used to chair the Committee on Fiscal Responsibility and Economic Development in the State Senate, and which is what Garland Gudger chairs now. And I'll be honest with you, we are constantly in competition. Don't think for a second that this is about corporate welfare and giving things away. No, it's not. It's about making sure that when companies are looking at three or four or five states, that we're the ones that's on top of the list. It's like trying to get Space Command. You're working on trying to get Space Command, and granted, that's a whole different story because politics got in play. But when you're trying to get Space Command here, we're one of a list. And then they have to examine all the things that happen within that list. What do we bring in terms of quality of life? What do we have in terms of a qualified workforce? That means you got to have workforce development. What do you have in terms of location? Are there sites where we could bring a $5 billion plant to do major manufacturing that would have the ability to have rail access, interstate access, all these things that it does it have the power grid able to support it? What does it take to come there? And then if you've got that, and then three other states have that, then it comes down to, okay, which one's better for us? Then they look at things like your school systems for their employees. They look at stuff like what's the economy like in your state? They look at things like a workforce that may or may not be ready but could be quickly trained. And then what other things can you provide? Can you provide things that assist that company with developing their workforce, like training? Do you have the ability then to provide key training and capabilities for them to be able to hire? And then, oh, by the way, there's going to wind up being tax incentives. If you come here, we will abate your taxes for a period of time. If you come here, we will not hand you a check. We're not talking about that. We're talking about doing things like, if you are a productive member of society, then we will abate your taxes. And one of the things that we did when I first came into office, and I know that they've been continuing this trend, is we began to make it a matter of contract. It's not just like a promise made by the governing bodies. No. It's a contract between the state and the company. If you come here or grow here, and we give you incentives, then there are milestones you may have to meet, and then we put what's called clawbacks into the contract. Clawbacks are literally saying, if you don't meet the standards, guess what? You have to repay those incentives. So that, to me, is a win-win. I look at this and think, okay, there's a lot of talk about what kind of states can do what, and where does Alabama sit on the overall stage? Well, there's a couple things here. There's what we call site selection. Then there's actual economic incentives, and then there's workforce development. Let's take three parts there. Site selection, economic incentives, workforce development. Site selection means, like I said a moment ago, do you have locations where we can expand our capabilities? And does it have the capacity for us to begin building now, or do you have to build it and maybe 3 years from now it's done? Well, site selection is a huge deal, y'all. You know, there's only two, and I'll get into this more detail in a minute. There's only two, I believe, last I checked, only two mega sites, they call them mega sites, that are they're given advantage status by the State Department of Commerce in Alabama. One's in Baldwin County, and one's up here where I live in Etowah County. 1,000 acres, generally speaking, is what they have. All the environmental work has already been done. The power can reach to it, so power and water and other utilities are fully capable and ready to be, you know, turned on. Sometimes rail access can add to it. Interstate access can add to it. And all this to say, it's there and it's ready. Well, the mega site in Etowah County has been waiting on a tenant now for a good, I mean, they've been developing this over time now for a good 10 years. But I really believe that there's probably in the near future going to be something that breaks about that mega site. People talk about when Mercedes came to the state of Alabama. Some get irritated because Mercedes got a big deal. They did get a big deal. Do you know how much Mercedes has meant to the economy of the state? Do you know what has happened with jobs in this state because of Mercedes? Do you know that because Mercedes came here and thrived, that we have now become the Detroit of the South? That auto manufacturing in Alabama with Hyundai and Toyota Mazda and Mercedes and Kia, and then all the tier two and three manufacturers that go along with them. So it's not like you have one plant and, well, that's cool. In my area, there's a plant that actually supplies the sunroofs and other major parts for the cars at the Mercedes plant. And they do it here and not somewhere else because they work under what's called real-time logistics now, which is way cool. And I'm getting in the weeds, but I'm like geeking on this stuff because real-time logistics means they know they've got X number of cars on the assembly line tomorrow, and they know that of those X number of cars, 32 of them are going to wind up needing sunroofs. And so the factory here in Alabama, in Gadsden area, puts 32 sunroofs in order of how they're going to be installed in a truck, and they roll up to the plant right when those cars are hitting the assembly line, and they come off the truck to the assembly line, no storage necessary. Real-time logistics. It's very cool. Well, why is that important? Because if real-time logistics is the wave of the future, then that means you got to have tier two and three manufacturers close by. So when a big box plants itself here in the state of Alabama, which is a wonderful thing, the tier two and threes have to be close so they can do real-time logistics. And then we have the Port of Mobile. The Port of Mobile is now one of the best warm water ports in the United States. And that's a huge deal, y'all. What that basically means is major manufacturers can set up in Alabama, which has now been ranked as one of the top site selection states in the nation, manufacture whatever it is they make, and roll it down the road to the Port of Mobile and get it wherever it has to go in the world. We have got to stay on top of that, and that's why we're going to talk about economic incentives and how best we can grow this state to be competitive on the national market. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back.